This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Welcome to KKFI Radioactive Magazine. Most people in this economy are struggling to keep the lights on, put food on the table, and send their kids to school. But imagine trying to do that on a poverty wage. Our guest tonight is from an organization trying to help low-wage workers. This is Richard Eichen. He's a McDonald's worker and a representative of Stand Up KC. Welcome, Richard.
Welcome. Glad to be here.
And Richard, you've been working for that same McDonald's for what, 15 years?
I've spent 25 years in the fast food industry. I've spent about 15 years with one lap of my last owner.
And you've gone from a minimum,
I currently make $11.17 an hour.
Which is considerably more than most McDonald's workers. The current minimum wage is what now?
$7.70 in Missouri, and I believe it's $7.65 in Kansas.
And the people represented by Stand Up KC are not just fast food workers. At Stand Up KC events, I've seen hospital workers, child care workers, non-tenured professors. There are a number of very low wage people in the economy, more than most people realize. Since the 2007-2009 recession, most of the new jobs created are low income.
Yeah, that is correct. I mean, about 3 years ago, it started off in New York City with a single strike involving fast food workers. But as this movement has grown and has expanded, it become more than just fast food workers, become a low-wage workers movement. And there are 64 million Americans who make less than 15. I mean, that's 46% of the American workforce. You know, the vast majority, the average median wage is around $10 an hour. Nationwide. I mean, these are the fastest growing jobs in the community here, and they're jobs you wouldn't think of. They're childcare workers, you know. You know, we're looking at jobs, you're looking at people who work in factories now, they're making minimum wage or a little above minimum wage. I mean, you know, home health care workers, you know, adjunct professors, these are professors who don't have tenure. You know, they also make minimum wage. So it's been a vastly growing movement of workers nationwide.
Oh, this is Bill Claus, and I wanted to welcome Richard and thank Tom for hosting the show. Now, you said you've been working for 25 years. Why don't you just tell us the history of that 25 years, what it looks like? You've worked your way all the way up to over $11 an hour. It's absolutely amazing that someone with that, you know, that much tenure and that much time in still has to struggle at such a low level, but tell us your history a little bit.
Well, I started out after high school. I was looking into first into going to community college at Longview, and then going to UMKC. And I was looking to get my own apartment and to find a job to pay my bills. And I started working at a McDonald's restaurant there off of right off of Grandview Road there by 435 there before they put in the triangle. The McDonald's restaurant no longer exists anymore, but that's where I started working at right after high school. And I started working there, and I was going to Longview Community College, worked hard to earn some degrees there, earn some college credits. Then I went to UMKC, but, you know, the cost of tuition kept climbing. You know, my wages couldn't quite keep up with that, and trying to struggle both of them, and my grades began to suffer, and ultimately I ended up dropping out because, you know, the cost continued to climb up there. And I've been all kinds of positions. I initially started working on front counter taking orders, then I was in drive-thru, you know, presenting out food and taking money in drive-thru, then I was in the kitchen. You know, I've been a trainer for crew members. I've been a kitchen management. I've tried management positions. I ultimately found my niche in maintenance and janitorial. And from there, I've pretty much spent the last 15 years in maintenance and janitorial work, and which I really enjoy doing.
I know we were talking a little bit before we came on the air, and I asked how much upward mobility was, and you told me how many management jobs were available in that line of work.
Fast food workers, only about 2% of them are in management.
So working 25 years, the fact that you're still not in management kind of shows an indication of that.
Yeah, at any given, even in my own store, on any given work shift schedule, there will be maybe one or two managers, anywhere from 15 to 20 crew people. I mean, so you have, the management pool is very small to begin with, and so there really isn't a whole lot, they really think really not a whole lot of upward mobility.
And even with that, I don't suppose they drive Cadillacs and live out in the suburbs either, right?
There are managers involved in fast food that are part of Stand Up KC.
Yeah,
they've been part of our movement because they're making what, maybe eight, maybe $9 an hour, more.
And I believe you told us you've got a limited amount of health insurance, but most of your coworkers don't.
Yes, I think the Affordable Care Act made it possible for everyone to work full time to qualify for medical insurance. And my owners worked very hard to find a healthcare plan that fits in with it. But even still, a lot of my workers don't make enough money to afford the premiums that the insurance offers. So they opt out of it. At $11.70, I make just enough that I'm able to afford this insurance. Even still, it's $158 a month for what I pay for, you know. And that's a considerable chunk of change.
And I believe you said you've been involved in some demonstrations and some civil disobedience, even going to jail.
I've been in Stand Up KC now for over 2.5 years, and I've been on strike 7 times. And I participated in their civil disobedience in both times. I was arrested once in August a few years ago, and just recently, back in November, I was part of the 100-some people who were arrested. We're looking back upon the history of the movement. We draw inspiration from things like the civil rights movements of the past, who have got their point across, made their messages clear through nonviolent civil disobedience. And so this is just another step for us to take, and to show how serious and how committed we are to this cause. You know, and we had classes, we had training on how to act, how to respond to this. You know, I was one of the people who spoke up, and I spoke to all of my workers addressing who were preparing to go out and do this, to sit down in the street and be arrested. Mm-hmm. And I said, whatever you do, make certain that when you are arrested for the cause of justice. You're not being unruly, not being disruptive or violent, because then people will say, then you deserve to be arrested, because look at them, they're acting like thugs. But we go in, we're quiet, we're peaceful. And the people will say, wow, they're being arrested because they're fighting for a living wage, because they're fighting for social justice. And that was the message we gave that day, to show how serious and committed we are to fighting for a living wage and for union recognition.
And people sometimes forget that Dr. Martin Luther King was killed when he was in Memphis for a strike, for to support a strike by garbage workers. I do recall the most recent event from Stand Up KC was participating in a statewide event in St. Louis, protesting Andrew Puzder as the new labor secretary. Do you think that they had any influence in forcing him to withdraw?
Yes, I think we did have an influence, and not just here in St. Louis, but nationwide there were protests being led by workers. I mean, this is a man who spent, the last few years championing against any kind of minimum wage increase. He was in favor of automation, replacing workers with robots and replacing workers with machines. I mean, he was not a champion of the workers, and we knew this from his record, that he was not a champion of the workers. He was not someone who was going to work for the workers, when he not create jobs, when he was so busy trying to push workers down and to destroy American jobs. And we got this message out. We through our protest and through our actions, senators took notice of this. And I think what happened is that they began to withdraw their support. And he saw this support coming away from him, seeing the questions being put forward by us workers. Right now, senators were considering asking him the same identical questions. And so he removed him. He resigned from the process just because he didn't think he had enough support and because he didn't want to face the questions that the workers had put in the mouths of the senators.
I think he's really a good example of really some of the problems that's, you know, systemic problems we have in the economic system we have. I mean, the guy's a billionaire, and he wants to begrudge people, in your case, in some of your coworkers' case, making $7.25 an hour, doesn't want to increase their wages or do away with minimum wage altogether. You know, one of the things that did help get rid of him was the pushback from a lot of the labor unions. And you have some support from labor and some other community partners as well. Would you speak on some of the support you have from around the community, some different organizations?
Well, Jobs for Justice, I think the Auto Workers Union has been a big supporter of us. There's the Service International Union, SEIU.
SEIU
is a big supporter of us as well. I mean, we have a lot of support, and we have a lot of community support as well, a lot of faith leaders who are supporting of us. And even there's been even business owners who have come forward too. You know, their business. I was part of a group discussion for raising the minimum wage to 13, which is what the city council voted on, 11 to 12. And there were business owners, you know, who said, you know, I'm already paying my workers such and such an amount of money. I mean, there was recognition even among the business community that $7 was just not enough to survive on.
Yeah. What do you, just to throw out a couple of things that I know that from people on the other side of the argument say, there are those that say that if they did raise it, that they would automate a lot of the jobs out. Do you have any? What do you say to that?
Well, one of the things we say too, that if they could have done it, they would have done it already. You know, they're not going to hesitate to wait. If they have any way they can save money, any way they can increase their profits, they're going to take it and they're going to do it. You know, there's already talk about that some McDonald's restaurants, you know, and over on the East Coast, I think it is, have bought in these kiosks where you go on and you order under this computer thing and that food is handed to you. I mean, these are things, but this has always been the thing they say, you know, they're going to replace us with machines, you know, but there's always going to be the need for people, They're going to be there. I mean, who wants to go there and have their order taken? You know, I used to make the joke about, you know, that no how 9 McFowlson has ever distorted or made a mistake on a customer's order, you know, and all. And who wants to go and talk to a machine? You know, they want to talk to, just people appreciate the interaction. For instance, if there's a customer complaint, I'll talk about a customer has a complaint and ask, can I speak to a manager? And this television screen drops down from the ceiling. And the guy says, oh, can I help you? And he goes, what? Hey, I can monitor everything from up here at corporate headquarters. I, you know, is there a real person in this store? And I'll be over there in the corner of my broom going, yeah, there's me. I'm sleeping the floor. I don't know what I can do for you. But this is the talk about the automation is a big thing they say. But if they'd done it, they would already do it.
I think we've all had the frustration when we get on online and go through one of those automated machines that pick one for Dr. What's-His-Face, pick two for the laboratory, and finally you're thinking, where do I throw the phone against the wall?
Mm-hmm.
One of the objections to raising the minimum wage has always been, if we raise the minimum wage, it's going to kill jobs. And that's been the argument every time,
mm-hmm.
starting from the night, as long as I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And what is your response to that?
Well, there's been a study. Some 600 economists submitted a study in 2014 that said it would not kill jobs. We've argued that this is a consumer-driven economy. You know, there have been talk about stimulus packages in the past, you know, to put more money in the hands of consumers. And that, in essence, is what we're fighting for, more money in the hands of American consumers to make this economy grow. It would not be it would not hurt the economy. The economy would grow and the economy would expand. We argued that it would be the exact opposite, that it would actually create jobs rather than take away jobs.
Yeah, the way I look at it is that if we raised the floor, then everyone would be on a level playing field, and so it would mean maybe the hamburgers would go up a nickel or whatever the portion of that hamburger that goes to labor costs are concerned, but the guy across the street's hamburger has to go up a nickel too. So, you know, raising up the living wage for the poorest among us, saying it's going to cost jobs, I think is a red herring, because everyone else that has that are dealing in that same kind of economy will be paying at least a better wage, and so they'll all be in the same economic position, I guess is what I'd say.
Well, one of the arguments that we like to make too about what you mentioned, I like how you mentioned the nickel.
Yeah.
Because he said we've done studies where if it went to $15 an hour, that would be how much it would raise. But if they chose to pass that cost on the consumers, we're talking about an industry that has about $200 billion, the fast food industry. You know, Burger King, McDonald's, Wendy's, they make almost $200 billion total a year. I mean, it's not their profits, but that's their total sales that they generate. I mean, McDonald's makes around $5 billion or so a year. You know, they could pay their workers more and not pass the cost on at all,
right,
if they chose to.
Yeah.
They would cut into profits a little bit, but that's not, I don't believe that wages are part of their expenses.
Well, one of the things that I've been reading about, as far as comparing what's going on these days to what's called so-called the Gilded Age back in the 1890s, is, you know, in both of those situations, what's happened back then and what's happened now is that technology has caused more and more increase in productivity, but it never gets passed along to the people, the workers that do it. And so this increased productivity is, there's been lots of talk about the inequality, of the growing inequality between the working class and the people that own these businesses. And you're absolutely right. You know, if they were to take a little bit, if they were to spread that wealth a little around from their own pockets rather than saying we have to add it on to the hamburger for the customers, then it would certainly be a fairer world all the way around.
During America's greatest prosperity, there were people like Henry Ford, people, the head of GM, and even Mr. Roosevelt realized you had to have workers paid more before they can buy the Model T's and the Chevys, and that is what built a middle class, and that the lack of that is what's destroying a middle class right now.
Richard, you've been taking care of yourself for 25 years, but I'm sure you have some coworkers that are maybe in a different situation. They're trying to support a family on probably less than the $11 an hour you got. You got any stories from the workplace?
There are a lot of stories. I mean, there was a worker who told a story, you know, about how she went to the grocery store and her child wanted this toy, and she was telling herself, you know, it was a $5 toy, and I don't even have enough money to buy even a $5 toy for her. You know, there are parents who go home to houses, you know, whether they choose between buying food, you know, or buying or keeping the lights on. You know, people who have gone home and faced eviction notices. I heard a story one time of a fellow fast food worker of mine who his wife and their three children spent the night in their van because they had been evicted out of their apartment. You know, and the ironic thing is he spent the night in the van in the parking lot of the store where he worked. He remembers waking up with a sore neck and everything, looking out the window of his van to see his manager pull up and wave at him. Because he had told her that if you cut my hours, I'm not going to be able to afford my apartment. And she had cut his hours. And he was, as he said, he's evicted. You know, and these are stories. I mean, you know, I hear stories of a man having to buy shoes for the children for school. But his child wanted a toy too, and he couldn't do both. I mean, we had a fast food worker who was a leader in our move. Her name was Myra. You know, she died because of complications due to diabetes, which is not something you normally die of, but she did not have health insurance. And she got sick, and she didn't go to a doctor, and they found her. She died from it.
That may be one of the least appreciated things about people that really are living on what I call starvation, poverty, wages, is, you know, life goes on. Mm. And if you happen to have the bad luck of getting a disease, or my daughter, you know, for example, she thought since yesterday was a holiday, she didn't know that the schools were in session. She got a ticket for going 35 in a 20-mile-an-hour school zone because she thought school was out. And so she got a ticket that was $343. Now, oh, I'm saying that because if that happens to somebody in your situation, how's somebody that makes $7.25 an hour going to ever come up with a $300 fine? Or, you know, their washing machine breaks down, or their car breaks down, or their, you know, their kid breaks a leg, or, you know, there's just 100 things that happen in life that when you have no cushion and you're just trying to survive, even with the 15 hours, it can be a problem. But but at $7.25 an hour, or even $11 an hour, it's certainly a lot worse than that.
Yeah, well, 52% of fast food workers are on some kind of federal assistance, you know, food stamps or housing. And I find it interesting that you had mentioned the ticket. I mean, you'd be amazed at how many workers, you know, do have, you know, when we participated in civil disobedience, we had to go through our workers to make sure people were volunteering, didn't have any outstanding warrants out for them, most of which because of something like that, a speeding ticket like $300 that they couldn't begin to afford to pay. And so they end up with a warrant out for their arrest. And they're not criminals. They're honest, hardworking people trying to feed themselves and their children. I mean, this is an example of what it means to struggle every day on low wages.
It does.
And I believe there's an issue right now. This, the question for a $15 minimum wage in Kansas City will be on the ballot in August, I believe.
Yes.
And I believe there's a problem that it may conflict with a new state law. HB 722, I believe, is the law that was mentioned.
Mm-hmm. There are some legal challenges regarding that law. But as to the petition ballot thing, the Supreme Court ruled that the city had initially taken it off the ballot last year. And that was ruled unconstitutional because the petitioners had gathered all the necessary signatures. They'd filled out all the paperwork. They had submitted their petition on time. And therefore, the city had to respect the petition process, the legal process, and they put, so it had to be go on the ballot. The question was which one, April or August, but because of the lateness of the Supreme Court ruling, it really was kind of a hard to try to get it onto the April ballot, so they kind of pushed it to the August ballot to be voted on. And but then, you know, once it's voted for, once it actually comes valid, then that HP law then comes into effect. But then there are legal challenges that could be made against that because, for one thing, it comes to a question of sovereignty, becomes a question of democracy. I mean, if the people of Kansas City vote for a minimum wage increase, should all of those voters' opinions and votes be discounted by Jefferson City politicians who decide we're going to ignore what the people say and we're going to do whatever we want? You know, and that's the issue right there. I mean, will the will of the people, will the voice of the people be respected or will it not be respected?
And what is upcoming for stand-up, KC? Do you have more events planned?
I'm not sure of any details yet about actual events planned, but I know that there are events planned. I mean, I'm part of a speaker corps of individuals. There's talk about having some kind of speaker storytelling session in April. I don't know the exact date of that. But that's an example of many of the things that are coming up. And we recently had a protest in St. Louis over the labor movement. I know there's others planned.
I'd certainly like to have a chance to record some of those stories and, with permission, broadcast them on upcoming shows. Because it's really great to have someone like yourself that actually has to live with these wages to come in and tell your story. And you're such a great spokesperson for it. And I know earlier when we've had come in to talk about this, there's been other people like yourself that that come in and talk about it and really want to commend you for doing what you can to help improve the lives not only of yourself but all your coworkers as well.
I want to point out that we didn't get a chance to mention the fact that I was part of a delegation of fast food workers, there was three of us, who went to Ireland. Because these McDonald's corporations, they're international corporations. They're McDonald's, KFC, Burger King, they're international. And, you know, and this low-wage workers, it's international suffering. I mean, in particular, we spoke with unions, because unions in this country are under attack. We see the Right to Work bill passed here in Missouri. But unions in Ireland have been suffering the same setbacks. Two, the same problems, the same way I spoke with other fast food workers. And I walked down Dublin, and everywhere I turned, there was a Popeye's Chicken, there was a Burger King, there was McDonald's.
Thank you for reminding us of that. Yes, McDonald's and Popeyes are seen all over the world. If people want to get someone from your organization, say you, as a speaker, what do they? Who do they contact?
They contact Rachel. I don't know your last name.
Hogan.
Rachel is in the studio with us.
Yeah, she's the person who's in charge of setting up meetings with a spokesman. Because
maybe go to KC, standupkc.org.
Yeah.
Okay, and you probably can maybe follow a link there and get all somebody.
I can mention another thing if we have time about the fact that one of the things about it is we don't have any set schedules. We have what's called just-in-time scheduling.
Oh, great.
Which,
yeah.
I mean, the schedules are put up like 1 or 2 days before the week ends. So you only have 1 or 2 days to know what your next week is going to be like, and you don't have any guarantees
and
what it's going to be.
No way of planning a home life or take the kids to the doctor or anything like that.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we like to try to decide how to contact Stand Up KC to set up it, because we don't know, I won't know when my day off days are for sure, you know, or what time I'll actually be able to get off work. And until I actually look at it, until it actually gets posted.
Have you ever been disciplined at work for maybe missing work for an action or anything like that? Or do you have a pretty understanding boss there?
I have a pretty understanding boss.
Yeah.
You know.
I think, you know, something like, I think we've mentioned when we're talking about this, that even some of the managers are involved with Stand Up KC, because it's not like they're raking in the bucks either, right?
No.
Yeah, so. Well, I know that, you know, the thing that that got me involved in these kind of movements was the labor movement early on, and I just know from labor history that it's been really sad to watch the decline of organized labor over the years, and really what it's going to take to bring it back is organizing at the level you are organizing at, because that's what happened in, you know, the early teens of the last century. It's what happened in the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what we need now to help bring the labor movement back. It's always been the hardest to organize people at that level, because, you know, it's so easy to find somebody else to replace those workers. But there's been a lot of – I just think it's really to be commended to see how dedicated and how you guys have struggled to make this work, and have had a lot of success around the country as well.
Well, I would think that as we point out how important it is that we make it this a multi-ethnic, multi-racial movement of workers, an all-inclusive, because all throughout history they have tried to pit one group against the other, to try to tear workers apart, and workers have to come together, because our strength is our unity.
Absolutely.
And people don't realize that everything they enjoy, whether they're part of a union or not, if you have weekends off, you have health insurance, everything you enjoy, if you have a decent salary for those people who are not minimum wage workers, it's all because someone fought for a union, and that was extended to the rest of the workforce.
That's right. Richard, there's probably something we should have asked you and didn't think to. Can you think of anything you need to let us know that we didn't think to ask you about, and tell us about it anyway?
Well,
I'm kind of putting you on the spot there.
This kind of put me on the spot, because we did speak about a lot of stuff. I managed to get in my talk about my Ireland trip and everything. So I spoke about my acts of civil disobedience that I've done. I've spoken about how it's hard for prices. Like, I know the story of my workers, you know, who went to the store and saw that milk had gone up to $4.89 a gallon, that a raise of like $2, and her raise, she only makes $1.72 more, but milk has gone up to $2.89. You know, these are examples of many of the stories that I can share.
Well, it's been a great discussion, and
I believe this is the end of the program. Thank you all for joining us. This is Radioactive Magazine. I'm Tom Huffman.